friends. Welcome to Silo Busting. I'm your host, Allison Coden, an interaction designer at EPAM Continuum. These are perilous financial times, we're told, as the economy either braces for the gentle bump of a soft landing, the bruising crunch of true recession, or some other as yet unknown evolution. We worry about job security, maybe hoard our savings a little, and wonder what this will all mean for us personally. Our banks and financial institutions are doing the same, hedging against a downturn with more conservative forecasts and maybe slowing their pace towards digital transformation and innovation more broadly. At the same time, they're hoping to hold us, their customers, a little more tightly too, to keep us loyal, stable, and invested. Trouble is Tom Novak, VP and Chief Digital Officer at Visions Federal Credit Union, and Alex Jimenez, Managing Principal Financial Services Consulting at EPAM, explain, an urge to move away from digital transformation in uncertain times may be at odds with the work of more deeply engaging customers. After all, in moments of stress, we tend to become more emotionally and maybe financially needy, craving reassurance, connection, and a sense of being known. We demand fairness in return for sharing more about ourselves. Flexibility as our circumstances change, and a personal touch to remind us that we matter. As Novak sees it, now's no time to halt digital transformation, wherever the economy may be heading next. Roadmaps may need to stretch, but the AI, analytics, and systems that underlie the kinds of banking experiences that build loyalty can't be put on the back burner if banks want to keep their customers close. As we all ride this economic roller coaster together, a digital future is one point of stability on the horizon for banks that hope to move forward with their customers.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for chatting with us. We hear from a lot of banks that they're still working on their 2023 budget, even though we are already into the year. People are getting nervous about what the economy might be or might not be, even though, you know, there's numbers like unemployment that's still doing well, and inflation seems to be reducing after the Fed changed rates. But in the meantime, you're seeing like the top four banks have gone out there and announced that they're increasing their loan loss reserves. So in all that's happening, we hear a lot of organizations saying we have digital transformation. We're going to put the brakes on that and really focus on cost efficiency. So my first question for you as the head of digital for an organization, what does that mean to you? And are you getting the same sort of direction or concern?
Thanks, Alex. And I appreciate you having me on the podcast today. I'm looking forward to this topic. To answer your question, that conversation around cost efficiency, operational efficiency, making sure that we stay within our budget, or perhaps we have to budget or allocate for things like loan loss reserves or provisions a little bit more than we anticipated, all of that conversation is happening on the Visions Federal Credit Union side. However, we're still keeping a keen eye towards if we stick to our digital transformation objectives, if we stick to this whole play of humanizing digital as we look to scale our business, there will be short, medium, and long-term benefits to doing that and will help us navigate some of these headwinds that are happening from a macroeconomic perspective. We are talking a lot about that dual mandate that the Fed has with, you know, stamping down inflation, but also being very mindful of unemployment numbers. And to reference some of those larger banks that you were referring to, a lot of them are speaking to a mild recession or a slightly flat recession. And the economic indicators are a little bit troubling, where inflation might be going down a little bit. The Fed is getting some pressure on how long do they keep raising rates. And then once they stop, how long do they keep them in that elevated level? They're getting some market pressures. But when we look at consumer spending, that's showing some signs of weakness, as opposed to earlier in 2022. So we want to be mindful of that. We want to be mindful of are people spending through a lot of the COVID monies that they had, the stimulus monies that they had, and now to meet the needs of their new lifestyle or current lifestyle, they're getting into debt. And are they able to go ahead and pay those things? So a lot of those economic conversations and cost efficiency conversations are definitely top of mind.
And so thinking about the work that you do and the work that we do here, I mean, when we look at digital transformation and how to change how we serve our consumers, or in your case, members. It's never an either or, right? It's always, we want to make sure that we improve the experience, but at the same time, we want to make sure that the organization remains viable and therefore is also driven by cost optimization and more so than anything, economically, is revenue increase and growth. So to me, it's funny to hear some organizations to say we're going to stop doing digital transformation because we gotta be more efficient, when that should have been part of this conversation altogether.
I completely agree. They're at a high level, there might seem that there's a paradoxical nature to this, right? We're spending money on digital transformation efforts, whether it's training and education, communication, new systems, new technologies, reskilling our employees, leveraging data more to make an insightful analysis, and maybe hiring talent to go ahead and digest all of that information. And there's a cost to doing that. And so there's an inherent slow down to speed up nature of digital transformation, that even though we're now experiencing economic headwinds and there's cost pressures, our cost of funds is going up, there's a increasing battle with deposits from a number of financial institutions, where all of these things are somewhat contradictory or conflicting with one another, it's this time where, as we continue to invest in digital transformation efforts and leveraging the data and insights that we get from those activities, that's where we can really propel ourselves out of the doldrums of this, let's call it, mild recession we're coming into in 2023. And it will be where we get a lot of our insights to move the business forward in the future. Using deposits just as one particular use case, not every financial institution and Visions is no different. We can't price ourselves above the entire market. We can't all of a sudden today say we need deposits really badly, so we're just going to give a 10% rate and see how much we get it. It's just not a reality. And so there's this mantra that you hear in financial services about always growing. We have to grow. And digital transformation in years past maybe was one vector of how the organization would grow. And I think we need to your point about an and value proposition as opposed to an either or, we can still grow, but it doesn't necessarily have to be meteoric growth. It can be profitable, sustainable growth. And when you do that, there are some trade-offs that you might have to have. There does put a premium on how well the organization prioritizes. And so perhaps not every single item on your digital transformation roadmap would get done in 2023, but the most critical ones that align with some of those macroeconomic conditions that we're experiencing. A great example, I think, is optimizing the digital account opening experience and making sure the funding options are exceedingly easy so that that new member or that existing member can move money into your organization.
And I understand that you've been working in that specific issue for the past couple of years. What are you seeing? What kind of accounts are you bringing in digitally that you were not getting through the physical channel?
We're seeing an increase in digital account opening, but counterintuitive to what maybe the broader market, the broader financial services industry is seeing, still the minority of our new membership accounts are open digitally. So only about 10 to 20% of our new memberships each year are open digitally. But 2021 over 2022, we saw about a 60% increase in digital new accounts. So trending in the right direction. However, we're seeing that as we dive deeper and look to be really good at the basics, not forget what our organization is about. At the end of the day, we're a typical savings and loan as the credit union is structured. We need to be really great at giving the member an easy experience as they go through digital, but also making things intuitive and serving up information in their moment of need. And so that's where personalization is coming in a lot. So we've done some decent work to go ahead and make the overall process a little bit easier. That was lends itself to that 60% increase year over year in new memberships open digitally. But we're still missing out on how we can form a real relationship with that member as opposed to more of a transactional relationship. So we're seeing a lot of digital new memberships being opened just because they're getting a loan. Maybe it's through an indirect auto dealer, or perhaps we've got a great mortgage rate and they open the membership because they have to. We're really not seeing, to our liking just yet, the digital account opening bringing people in because we have a great relationship opportunity, or we're doing things that no other financial institution is doing, such as offering free identity theft insurance and credit monitoring. So we've got to do some work there in terms of personalization and a little bit deeper dive into design thinking. But that's some of our objectives as we're into 2023.
So you bring up personalization. It's something that I talk a lot about. As a way to build relationships digitally. I know that you're doing something, some things along these lines, and using data, using AI, to start building those capabilities in a remote, non-physical channel. How's that going? And are you seeing, the promise of AI and personalization, starting to be there?
In short, we are. There's a lot of room to run. We have a lot of potential yet to still realize, but we've been about a year into this. So end of first quarter 2022 is when we really started our journey with a personalization partner, Finalytics in this case. And to a degree, in the journey of personalization, we didn't know what we didn't know. And we've been trialing and erroring some certain things. We've been learning as we go. But we've also been using some more proven methodologies that are out there, leveraging AI on the back end, machine learning to be specific. And we're seeing part of the reason why that increase in digital new membership applications occurred over 2022 was directly tied to some of those personalization efforts. What our personalization journey is showing to us is that we can't just be good at personalization alone. It actually needs to be complementary with a lot of other, let's call them digital skills or modern day digital skills that institutions probably have been working on for a number of years. So organic SEO, really having a customer journey orchestration or member journey orchestration through your public website, really being thoughtful about how you onboard a member digitally. So what are some of those things that they're looking for, potentially for switching their direct deposit and how we can make that an easy digital switch, setting up bill pay or using your debit card instead of the debit card from the financial institution that they came from and linking that to all the subscription services that they have, Netflix, Hulu, and others. So we realize that we're barely scratching the surface on personalization, but the positive numbers have been coming in, both from a new membership perspective, and also when we juxtapose non-personalized content, generally in the form of a banner ad or some basic content on a web page, but non-personalized content against personalized content that's adapting dynamically to how that visitor or that member is interacting with our public website or digital banking, we're seeing a doubling or tripling of interactions and conversions from that early stage personalization that we're doing, with all going towards a long-term vision of how do we continuously be there in our members' moment of need, most especially in the digital space. So long journey ahead of us, but very positive and promising results so far.
When we talk about machine learning or AI, a lot of times we talk about it as a nice to have, but certainly in financial services, we have enough processes where we can apply AI to automate or improve a process. And I know that you're doing some of that as well beyond the direct to consumer experience. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we've in some way, shape, or form, we've been working with machine learning since 2018. And we started a partnership with a fintech way back then called Micronotes. And that was meant to give conversational notes in the digital banking experience. It could be sales related. It could be education. It could be just general information, just engagement with that member as they're going through our digital experience. So that's when our machine learning journey started in earnest. And we've learned a lot through that process. And one of the biggest things that we've taken away is, while machine learning and the larger topic of AI is fantastic, and it's something that is going to continue to reshape how financial services and a lot of other industries operate, there is something to be said for getting the basics right and doing that exceedingly well. So something as simple as your traditional business intelligence, really understanding, you know, your data team being focused on traditional business intelligence and gleaning insights from there. And once you have a good understanding of where's your members' money coming from? Why are they doing business with you? Are they doing business more digitally versus in branch? Or what kind of alchemy of interaction are they working with your financial institution? Some of those insights can mature the organization to the point where you have some really relevant and really powerful use cases for machine learning. So in a lot of ways, we did it in a little bit of a reverse order. We did some of the machine learning first, and we're still continuing to do some machine learning activities on the personalization front. But it has helped to educate us that there were some foundational elements that we could do a lot better on, and they could really complement one another is what we're focusing on now.
On the process improvement area, so improving underwriting or fraud prevention. Are you applying any of those learnings as well?
It's a great question. We are definitely getting our foot in the door when it comes to fraud mitigation and better lending, better underwriting, more scalable automated lending automation. So we are in the throes of working to launch an AI-powered loan decision engine that complements our current loan origination system. And that's meant to augment and automate those decisions at upwards, we hope, of an additional 30% increase in automation from where we are today. And the big get with that is AI's ability to go ahead and consume huge amounts of data and extrapolate and correlate that against some of the manual decisions that we were making and help us understand the trends that we're making as people, as humans, that maybe it's really difficult for us to see. So Zest.ai is a great example, our partner that we're working with to bring that ongoing lending automation to bear that we hope to have early second quarter of this year. And it's really also meant from a DEI perspective and a regulatory perspective. If done well, and it needs to be constantly managed and curated and monitored, but if done well, we can actually bring less bias to the equation when it comes to lending and financial services than maybe we don't even realize we're doing now from a manual perspective. So we're keeping a keen eye on that benefit as well. AI sometimes has a bad rap that it could invite some unintended biases into business processes. So we've been putting an extra focus on that process and really hitting it from multiple angles so that we get the automation and the scalability component, but also we stay true to the regulatory compliance and our values as an organization.
You've mentioned, by my count, three different fintech companies that you're working with. So clearly your visions and your team is partnering with fintechs. Do you see that as an ongoing proposition, particularly as a way to improve processes and optimize costs?
Absolutely. It's from my perspective, fintech partnerships are a must-have. And it's really up to the leadership team to determine what is the right balance. You know, we go back to these traditional, maxims of do you build, do you buy, do you partner? And when we talk about partnership here at Visions, we truly think of it in terms of we're winning together. We're co-creating together. There might be something that the fintech partner brings to the market out of the box, but that's not where we see the relationship going. That just might be the start of the relationship. And so we get our hands in, we roll up our sleeves, and we actually get to co-create together with them, sometimes to include doing some co-development on things. So fintech partnerships are key to that. I think the term I keep hearing ballyhooed around is fintech enablement. And it's really, in my opinion, more of the same as we go back to fintech partnerships that Visions has had all the way back to 2018 and sometimes farther back than that. It's not simply the technology or the niche that they help a financial institution out with. It's also being able to question conventional wisdom, to look at problems from a different perspective. And when you start getting that partnership tone, where the fintech is actually augmenting your team here at the financial institution, that's when we've seen us and the fintech really hit our stride. And we start doing not only innovative things because of what they've already brought to market, we start to challenge even their conventional wisdom and bring it to the next level.
So going back to something I said earlier about organizations looking at their roadmap, at the digital transformation roadmap, and putting pause on it, there are some things that I know that you've done. So last year you partnered with NYDIG on a crypto wallet, and I remember having conversations with other organizations saying, you know, the guys at Visions are nuts. They're doing this, they're going ahead and doing something that nobody's asking for. Is this an example of something that you might be slowing down, or are you continue to pursue that relationship and those capabilities?
Yeah, we're constantly faced with these seemingly difficult decisions to make. Do you forge ahead and be proactive? Do you take a calculated risk or not? And one of the things we pride ourselves is, from a risk perspective, how well we assess risk. And that doesn't mean things can't go awry, but it means we have confidence in our due diligence practices and how we mitigate things if they get to a worst case scenario. And so in the terms of NYDIG and cryptocurrency or digital assets more broadly and blockchain, there was a great opportunity with NYDIG that we still continue to support and are thriving with them, that we felt was not just an opportunity to bring a buy, sell, and hold Bitcoin function to our digital banking members, but an opportunity to get our foot in the door in terms of where blockchain is going and where Bitcoin in this case or cryptocurrency is going down the road. It's our belief that Bitcoin and certain other forms of cryptocurrency aren't going away, and it's only a matter of time before they become more of a traditional norm in financial services. So we've taken the stance that how can we take a calculated risk? We believe we've done that. That's why you see us not dealing in all the other cryptocurrencies yet besides Bitcoin, because we believe it's a true store of value. And then behind the scenes, we've been able to look at things such as how do we bring Bitcoin rewards to our cardholders, our debit card and credit card holders? How do we start to have conversations with our regulators and others where we can lend against Bitcoin? Maybe it's an alternative to payday loans, because ultimately the borrower would be using their own funds. They wouldn't be getting charged a traditional interest rate as they would get from a payday lender, which could be 100%, 200%, just exorbitant rates. And it gives that member an opportunity that they know they're not going to have to be fishing for extra funds in case the price of Bitcoin goes down drastically. So those are just a few of the applications we've been looking at behind the scenes. And to those out in the market, I would certainly appreciate trepidation as it comes to especially unregulated activities in the financial services space like a cryptocurrency is. But I would juxtapose that with the need to innovate. And there's a mentality that we have here on our side, especially in the digital realm, is change before you have to. And so provided that you were doing that in a prudent way, and we believe we're vetting partners who have similar values along that journey, we've been showing a lot of success. Everything doesn't have to be a home run. Sometimes it's just a single or a double, but those tend to add up to some really beneficial results.
That's great. So we talked about the physical channel still very appropriate. And in fact, you know, we just did a survey here at EPAM of consumers throughout several countries. And in the U.S., a large portion of consumers continue to visit the branches. And as you probably remember me saying to you and you agreeing, digital is not just what's on the screen, but also how we can apply digital technology to help the physical channels. Again, with that spin of, customer optimization, improving processes and so on, are there anything that you're doing to augment, improve the physical processes, whether it's the branch, the contact center, or any other physical channel?
Absolutely. So I completely agree with that point, Alex, that it goes back to what you said at the beginning of our talk here. It's not an either or, it's an and value proposition. And I certainly believe for community financial institutions, both credit unions and community banks, that it can be a differentiator that we blend appropriately and strategically these digital and physical worlds. So a lot of times the workforce out in the branches can actually be the best advocate for moving digital transformation efforts forward and also educating the consumer base on why they would want to try a new feature or enroll in a service or make their lives a little bit easier with automation. One of the examples that comes to mind is our digital fluency partner, Lemonade LXP. And mm-hmm. over the years, before we went on our digital transformation journey, we got a lot of feedback from the frontline staff that, you know, it's great. I use the mobile app or I use this feature, but it's really difficult for me to translate that to a member walking in and trying to help them change behaviors. COVID did accelerate some of that, but it also exacerbated the pain point that we weren't doing a great job around digital fluency and financial literacy towards all of these tools on how to manage your money. So with Lemonade LXP, we've hit both sides of the coin, both the employee side and the member side, to go ahead and optimize some of that content that's out there and give them, whether it's multiple choice questions in a gamified format, whether it's click-through tutorials for the members to go through. We've done a lot of work to demystify what it means to be digital. And that's taken a little of the fear or the trepidation out of the members who tend to frequent the branches. So that's just one thing. The other thing that we've done from a connective tissue perspective is simple things that many institutions have done years before. So this isn't necessarily anything innovative, but highlighting the need for digital appointment booking and that we can start to have the interplay between branches and a digital interface for all sorts of reasons why you would connect to a banker physically, a mortgage appointment, maybe you needed a notary. That dovetails into some things that we've done to move things forward. And now we offer a remote online notary for our members. So through these efforts that we've looked to connect the worlds, something as simple as digital appointment booking that I believe were in a deficit position at when COVID hit, we went ahead and plugged that hole. That allowed us to catapult forward and start to offer more connective tissue items, such as that remote online notary I mentioned.
Yeah, interestingly enough, I've seen organizations that stood up appointment set up online actually removed it from their websites once the branches were fully open. So sometimes we're our own worst enemy, right? We learn something and then we don't apply it. Similar way, all the organizations that did an awesome job of standing up a PPP digital loan process have not pursued doing that for regular small business loans, right?
It always seems like in financial services we're negotiating with paradoxes. And, you know, we're coming up against these things and we see a clear and present danger from COVID. And then after we think everything, the dust has settled, we just go back to our norms. And keeping that urgency and that inertia we got from innovating and moving things forward on behalf of the betterment of our members and customers, that's really the key. That's the people aspect of digital transformation that either a leader in the organization or a change advisory board or whomever it might be really needs to keep that momentum alive. And it's really hard to hold yourself accountable when something catastrophic is no longer staring you in the face. So there's a lesson that we took from COVID, a people lesson, and that is we were able to achieve things as an organization in record time, literally within days, sometimes just a week, that we never thought possible. So PPP is a great example. We were not in the SBA PPP business or really the SBA business at all prior to COVID. But based on leveraging some of the great partners and the tools that they have, DocuSign is a really good example of that. We were able to stand up a PPP loan application within 3 days and serve all of our members' needs that had a small business and were looking for an outlet to go ahead and survive COVID. And so there's lessons from that time that we still try to infuse in today's world. So personalization being that one front that, all right, we may have started personalizing content for only about 10% of our visitors. And now we've slowly scaled that upwards of 65% of our visitors as we test and learn, test and learn. We don't want to go ahead and sit on that success from 10% the utilization from visitors. We really want to see where those limits are in a thoughtful and a calculated risk manner. But keeping that mentality is really key, in my opinion, to digital transformation success.
Well, I think you just summarized a lot of what we discussed with that comment. Tom, thanks so much for joining us, and I hope you have a great week since we were recording this on a Monday.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Always great talking to you, Alex. Thank you for having me.
This has been Silo Busting, a podcast from EPAM Continuum. EPAM Continuum integrates business, experience, and technology consulting focused on accelerating breakthrough ideas into meaningful impact. Why do we do this? Because real opportunities aren't siloed. Thanks to Alex Jimenez and Tom Novak for the great conversation. Cheers to Kit Palalas, our sound engineer extraordinaire, for getting this podcast recorded. Applause to Ken Gordon, our producer, for all his masterminding behind the scenes. I'm your host, Allison Coton, and I'm off to check my balances.